This is Scott Richmond.
And Arnie Sherman.
You're listening to What Do You Know on News Talk KGVO, AM 1290 and 98.3 FM. Arnie Sherman, a good Sunday morning.
What's really good about this Sunday morning is we get to talk with the icon of radio in all of Montana, Peter Christian. You know, every one of our listeners knows who Peter is. Every
right.
Grizz fan knows who Peter is. Everyone in Missoula knows who Peter is. You know, 25 times he's won, you know, awards for being the best journalist in the state. I mean, the guy is unprecedented in his background and history. I mean, he's been on the air for 20-something years on Town Square and had a media career even before that. And we get to have him on the other side of the studio today and talk to him about his 50 years. You're getting ready to MC a show.
Right.
An event that will celebrate 50 years of Peter's broadcasting career. And also, importantly, the proceeds from the event go to who?
Oh, yeah. Fight Crime Investing Kids, a charity that was brought to us by the county DA, Kirsten Pabst.
Yeah.
So
even when he's celebrating his life, there's a charitable end to it. You
well,
know?
Two areas that are two areas of passion for Peter: children and families, and fighting crime, law enforcement.
Hopefully, it's not fighting children and enforcing parents or something like that. No, Peter's great, and I've there are questions I've always wanted to ask Peter.
Oh no.
Yes, and I'm going to do it on this show today.
Oh, this is exciting, everybody! This is a tune in moment. This is a moment where now the griller becomes the grill master.
Well,
right?
You know, he very rarely exposes most of himself on the air. All these years on Talkback and the
right.
other shows and writing, you know, pieces for the news, is very little Peter. He holds himself back. So this is the show where we find out about the man, the legend,
Peter Christian. Right. Who's the real Peter Christian? We are celebrating Peter Christian's 50 years in broadcasting. And by the time this airs, it'll already have happened at the Hilton Garden Inn. And Arne, you'll be there with
yes,
me.
Yes, be there Thursday night.
Thursday night. But let's talk to the man, the myth, the legend about his storied career. And I think he's got more than 10 minutes of conversation to be had.
He certainly does.
All right. Looking forward to it. Back after this with Peter Christian. Okay, Arnie Sherman, we are back with our guest, the inimitable.
The one and only.
Peter Christian.
You know, we told the audience we were going to have the most well-known broadcaster, and I didn't say to them it isn't Ron Burgundy. So if those of you want to stop listening now, we do not have Ron Burgundy. But we have someone better, Peter Christian.
Well, gentlemen, thank you for doing this. I really appreciate it.
50 years. Doesn't it seem like, you know, 100?
Well, to be honest with you, I was just talking this over with some friends of mine, and they said, how? Well, basically, just went like that. I mean, it's like I woke up one morning and I started work at my first radio station, and then this morning I woke up and came here, and it's like all the years in between just...
I could tell we're in the same age bracket. I understand that. And so it's sort of like the old question, how does the elephant get eaten by the ant?
Right.
One bite at a time.
One bite
all
at
of a
time.
Sudden, one day at a time, and
right.
it's 50 years later.
Exactly.
So let's harken back. Let's get into the time machine. We're going to go back to 1973.
Mr. Wizard.
Yes. Okay.
Richard Nixon was president.
Yes.
We were involved and engaged in the war in Vietnam.
Right.
And you started your radio career in Helena, Montana. Tell us what that felt like.
Well, I did. And I will tell you, just as a little backstory, I was in a rock and roll band called... The Dark Side.
Yes.
Oh,
and
nice.
And now you got to remember, this is long before Darth Vader and Star Wars.
There was also a song called the Dark Side that was done by...
The Shadows of Night.
Yeah.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, it was the flip side of Gloria.
Yeah.
And G-L-O-R-I. Anyway, so my
which
bandmates,
was originally done by them, which had, what's his
Van
name?
Van Morrison.
Van Morrison is the lead singer.
There
anyway,
you go. Okay.
I digress.
Well, anyway, my bandmates were...
Well, where are you from, by the way? Where's all this happening?
I am a Marine brat. I was born in Hawaii, and my parents were both lifers in the Corps. And they got divorced, and make a long story short, we ended up moving from a beautiful split-level house in Bryn Mawr Park, Virginia, to living in my grandparents' basement in Helena.
Wow.
When I was,
so they fought over
12.
You and your grandmother won?
No. But anyway, in Helena, I got to know Mike Knight, Tom Hansen, and Rick Pfeiffer, and they were all 2 years older than me. And I'm a drummer, okay? Not I was a drummer, I am a drummer. That is
it's a life calling.
That is one of the identifying factors of who I am. I'm a percussionist, I'm a drummer. I love to play drums. I'm always pounding on things. I actually have in my car right now, I take it everywhere, a pair of drumsticks that were signed by J.K. Simmons.
Wow. Nice.
And so in case I run across a random drum set in the middle of the road, I am ready.
So did cool you like that? His version of that movie that he did playing the drums?
Let me tell you, he
won an award for that.
Yes,
character.
He was Academy Award winner. Yes. And remember, he thanked his mom. He said, "Call your mom." Remember that?
Yes.
Anyway,
but I
got into this band, and I was like 14, and they were like 16, 17, 18. And so we got all this equipment together. We went to Hoffman Music in Spokane. We bought a bunch of custom amplifiers, you know, the tuck and roll. I don't know if you ever saw the tuck and roll Naugahyde.
Sure.
Anyway, so we bought a bunch of that stuff and a PA system, and I had a 1964 Ford Econoline van, and we off the road, on the road, we went.
To Spokane.
We went to Spokane to
got
get,
it.
To
got
get
it.
The,
then we're on the road.
Get the equipment. And then we came home, and we played at all the dances. I mean, in Havre and Hardin and Glasgow and Shelby and Miles City and Bozeman and everywhere.
Wait a minute, but you had you're 14 and you're doing all this. That's pretty adventurous.
Well,
for someone
were you just
that
a
young.
Percussionist, or did you also join in singing?
I was a singer. I was the ooh ah guy.
Right, the ooh ah guy in the background.
They wouldn't let me sing lead, but yeah.
Were any of your supervisors, you know, your adult supervision, were they okay with this?
My mom was thrilled that I was making money. We made. Because we were poor. I mean, we lived in a little itty bitty tiny trailer, and my mom was thrilled that first of all, I not only did that, I also went to high school, and then I had a job after my high school day was over. I was a box boy at Buttry's, and became an apprentice stockman there, and all that kind of stuff. But all during this time, I'm playing rock and roll with my friends.
And were you listening to the radio? Did you grow up listening to the radio?
Yes.
Okay, what stations were you listening to?
Well, that's just it. I really didn't start listening to the radio until I got to Helena, right? And I began getting into rock and roll and the Beatles. Of course, the Beatles were my first real exposure to what I figured real rock and roll, the British Invasion would happen, Dave Clark Five, the Kinks. All those things.
And were you listening to Ringo? Were you paying attention to how he played?
Absolutely. I Ginger Baker was one of my favorite
drummers.
Felix Felix Pappalardi
with the Young Rascals.
Young Rascals was another favorite that I tried to model my drumming
after. He was
after.
A good drummer. Underrated, but a good drummer with the Rascals.
Yeah. So anyway, I developed my own style. I had a double bass drum Ludwig drum set.
Ludwig?
Yeah. And
you saved up for that.
Yes. And I had a Gretsch. Stainless steel snare, 64 snare, and it was my baby. I never let it go out in the cold. It was in the car with me. I practically rocked it to sleep at night, and I was very, very serious about my drumming.
Was there somebody, a teacher or somebody at school that influenced you?
Yes, but when I was in junior high, my mother, who actually played in the U.S. Marine Corps band, she was a percussionist. She was a little tiny thing, about a little less than 5 feet tall, and her favorite memory was John Philip Sousa was in his over 100 years old and heard them play Stars and Stripes Forever, and he came down and patted my mother on the head.
Ah,
wow. That's one memory I'll never...
That's
you know,
a big deal for
us. It's a very, very big deal. Sure. So anyway, there was a gentleman in Helena named Gene Brown, very legendary drum teacher. And my mother insisted that I learn classical drumming, all the rudiments and the single stroke, double stroke, roll and five stroke, seven stroke, 11 stroke, whatever, flams, flamadiddles, paradiddles, all that. And so I learned how to do all that by playing in the Missoula City Band with the gentleman who sold me my first drum set, Scratchy Clark, or Clark Music.
Right.
So anyway, I have very, very deep roots in Helena, the Helena music scene.
And at 14, when you started playing on the road with
right.
this band,
right.
they obviously gave you some solos here and there to bang away on, right?
Yes, absolutely.
And what was your favorite back then?
Well, obviously, when it finally came out, we'd been together for a couple of years, and Enigata de Vida came out.
Oh, yeah.
Iron Butterfly.
Iron Butterfly.
Iron Butterfly. And as soon as I heard that drum solo.
Enigata de Vida.
Right. Which was supposed to be in the Garden of Eden.
But they were so stoned. That's right. That's the story about it. It was supposed to be in the Garden of Eden. And he goes, in a Garden of Eden, baby.
Well, you know why this is a favorite track of radio programmers. You know why, don't you?
Because it's 24 minutes long.
Yeah, exactly.
They go to the bathroom.
It's a bathroom record.
Lunch.
Or other things.
Yeah. There were favorite bathroom records. Free Bird was another one.
Yeah.
Anyway. MacArthur Park was a good one.
Oh, yeah. Richard Harris droning out on MacArthur Park.
Yes, yes.
So, Peter, that was a turning point for you.
Yes, it was. And I learned that entire drum solo from beginning to end. And here's how it would work, okay?
Yep.
We would play, and the Enigata de Vida was the last song in, like, our second set.
Right.
And when I started my drum solo, I played about 15 minutes of drum solo.
Wow.
While my other bandmates... we're out getting something to drink and flirting with the girls. I'm up there
banging away,
sweating my whatever off by doing this this drum solo. And then of course, when my drum solo was over, boop boop chick, boop boop chick, and boop boop chick, and they come back running back on, and I'm okay. Let's keep going.
One more time.
So that was our deal.
So how did that intersect with getting on the air and being a DJ?
Okay, all right. I was at a crossroads because my bandmates obviously were older than me, and they graduated from high school, and they went their various directions. They didn't want to stay doing the dark side. So basically, I just got serious about, you know, I was going to become an apprentice stockman and all this kind of stuff. And my girlfriend at the time, a wonderful young lady, we were coming home from church group one night, and she said, "You know," she says, "you like music, right?" I said, "You're the rock music." I said, "Yeah." I said, "Well, we were listening to KCAP radio in Helena, 1340,
right?"
And why don't you be a DJ? And I said, "Wow, I never even thought of that." So I got on the phone. Well, first of all, I was really nervous. I was going to go. I called Jim Schaefer, who, by the way, I still do commercials for.
No, I know. Under Christian Communications.
Yeah. Peter Christian Communications is my business where I do copywriting production. Anyway, the very first place I worked was at KCAP. Anyway, Jim Schaefer, he invited me to come in. He knew I had no training. I had no experience. But I said, "Look, I was a rock and roll drummer. I absolutely love the music that you play."
And how old are you now?
I'm 19.
Okay.
Okay. So I'm 19. And I called him up and said, "Hey, what do I need to do?" He said, "Why don't you come on down Saturday morning and we'll set up a reel-to-reel tape recorder," right? And he gave me a piece of copy, a couple of little news things. And he left the room and I read them, right? And he came in, turned the tape off. He says, we'll call you if anything comes up." I said, "Oh, thank you." Whew, you know. But the problem was, the night before, I was so nervous, I did not sleep a wink.
Oh,
and when you don't sleep a wink, you wake up with your voice like this.
Right. Did you have the golden pipes that you have today? Was the basis of it there already, or did you develop that over time?
The basis was there, but it was, of course, it was raw.
Right.
There was no training there at all.
I think of Frank Sinatra playing with, you know, the early bands and how his voice was, you know, basically there, but
right.
higher and then how it matured over time until, you know, when he hit this.
Was that
peak.
You? Was that you, Peter?
I have no idea. I can't judge that. But anyway, he called me up. This was Saturday morning. Called me up Sunday night. He said, "Man, you got a really nice voice. I want to hire you. I have a full-time opening, midnight to 6, okay?
Yeah.
Now, midnight to 6 at the number one station in Helena at 19 with no training and no experience, right?
Big deal.
And so I went in that first night. I was so nervous. The guy that trained me, a guy named Steve Sorkness, who was Dale Stevens on the radio, he trained me, right? And I was so nervous that I flicked that microphone switch and broke it, and it went all the way flying across
did you
the
really?
Room. And Steve Sorkness said, "It's going to be a long night."
Do you remember what your salary was for this first?
Yes, vault? Yes, yes, yes. I eventually. By the way, the first song I ever played.
Yes.
Was oh come on, doggone it! It was right in the top of my head. 1973. Anyway, I'll think.
Three
about
Dog
it.
Night.
No.
Jeremiah was a bullfrog?
No. Anyway, so we moved on, and I became the oldies director, right? And you got to remember, this is the time we're playing 45 RPM records on turntables with, you know, Hugh Burns and all that kind of stuff. And I had 2,400 oldies to catalog. That was my job. So I learned what every single name of every single song was, who wrote it, who produced it, how long it was, whether it had a fade end or a cold end, and how long, and most importantly, how long the intro was.
Right.
Because if the intro is 36 seconds, a radio announcer can do a weather forecast over the top of the beginning of the record.
Right.
Or you can do a public service announcement, or you can have a little a bit or a gag or whatever and talk it right up to the time when
the
vocals start.
Hit the post.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Hit the post.
You
so anyway,
the post.
That's where my career started.
How did you choose? No secret to our listeners.
It was luck and fate mixing together.
Yes,
right.
But how
did
he pick his radio name?
Okay, my radio name. My real name is not Peter Christian. Those of you who know me know that my real name is Wall, W-A-L-L, and my boss
Wall Christian.
Yes, my boss Jim Schaefer said, look. And his words to me were, and I'll never forget this, if you don't want 12-year-olds calling you in the middle of the night requesting Seasons in the Sun at home, right, then you need to have an air name.
Yes.
And so I was active in my youth group and serious about my walk with God. And I said, well, you know, how long am I going to be doing this? A couple of years maybe, right? Who knows? So I picked Peter Christian.
Right.
And so that's who I have been forever and ever since then. And
is that weird having a...
Yes. It's very weird
an
having
alias.
An air name.
Is it an alias or is it a nom de plume? What is it?
A nom de air.
Nom de air.
What's it like? Yeah, because people, you know, everyone knows you as Peter Wall, but then now your listening public, your fans, your audience.
Exactly.
So how long did the Helena gig last?
The Helena gig lasted 2.5 years.
And then?
I worked my way up from midnight to six, two nights, and then to afternoon drives, and then I was in doing middays at KCAP, Rapid Rising Star, right? Anyway, so
well,
I got
in the 70s, everybody was listening to radio.
Right.
I mean,
so I got a call from Vern Argo.
Oh yes,
over here in Helena.
Yes,
over here in Missoula. Which was engineer. I did not know this, but it was actually undertaken by Tom McGinley.
No.
Oh, really?
Tom McGinley, legendary engineer.
Engineer.
Right, exactly. And he convinced Vern to give me a call. And I was making, I was making $350 a month.
Wow. Just what you're making now.
Yeah.
So that was good
don't
money.
Don't get
back
him started, Arnie.
And
he's gonna ask for a raise.
Yeah, and Vern said, well, I can pay you $500 a month. I said, wow.
Wow.
So I jumped in my car.
Yes.
Off I went.
Wait
to
a minute.
Helena.
So we're talking 1975, 1976. When does Lorna,
I moved to Helena in 1976.
Okay.
In the centennial year or bicentennial year.
Right.
When do you meet your bride?
Okay. I met Lorna. Oh, my goodness. Lorna. Yeah. This was amazing. Sorry. I met Lorna. It was the KYLT wedding fair. Okay, the KYLT wedding fair, and this was long before
we did it.
Z100 did the wedding fair, right?
Right.
So anyway, we did the wedding fair. I was wearing a powder blue tux. And I had the stash working, right?
Nice.
I had the killer stash going on.
Yeah, the flowered shirt, the ruffled shirt?
No, it was just a regular, it was a powder blue tux. So anyway, before that event, I was the MC. I did a lot of MCing. I emceed the Junior Miss pageant in Missoula. And because all the Junior Miss contestants had a talent, right?
Right.
It was my job to entertain the crowd in between. And so, because I'm not a great comedian or any of that kind of thing, so I had my guitar, and I knew how to play guitar and sing. So I sang a couple of Christian songs and whatever, just to right. fill the time, right? So anyway, at the wedding fair, a couple months later, Lorna was there with her sister Doreen, who was getting married. And they sat in the front row, and I looked at her, and I said, oh, my gosh, that's the most beautiful girl I've ever seen, blah, blah, you know, blah, blah, blah. And so she walked up to me during a break and said, Mr. Christian, because you know Lorna's voice.
Right.
She says, Mr. Christian.
So sweet.
Mr. Christian. Nobody ever called me that before.
Right. You're looking over your shoulder. Right, yeah. Who's that guy?
Who are you talking to? So anyway, she says, I heard what you did at the Junior Miss pageant, and I love the Lord, too, and all this kind of stuff. And so we began dating, and then in 1976, we got married.
That's beautiful. So,
and it's been a love story ever since.
It has been a love story ever since. We got 44 years coming up.
That's amazing.
So we got married in 1980.
Wow!
So four years later.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so it was a they long
courtship.
They met
in the bicentennial. Right. They met in the bicentennial.
They met in the bicentennial. I got it.
So anyway,
so in all these years, I want to jump around a little bit. All these years, can you point out two or three career-related highlights? I mean, you've broadcasted through all kinds of stuff. You know, you started off, there was the Vietnam War, and we had a bunch of other wars since then. Right. We had lots of presidents. We've had lots of commotions and lots of highs and lows. We had 9-1-1. We had all this, you know, all this sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
What stands out to you?
Well, what stands out to me, a couple things. First of all, the day Elvis died, I remember I was working at KYLT at the time. And we had an AP machine or a UPI machine.
Right.
And
United Press International for our listeners.
Associated Press.
AP.
And UPI as well. And all of a sudden, I heard something I had never heard before. I heard our AP machine ding 10 times.
Wow.
It had never dinged 10 times before, ever, in all the years that I've been working in radio, right? And it was the death of Elvis Presley.
Oh my God! Yeah. I remember where I was then.
So anyway, that was kind of a big moment, and then when 9/11 occurred, I was doing the Morning News Express on KGVO, right? And so we're all watching the Twin Towers and all that. Let me just go back a little bit.
Sure.
When Mount St. Helens exploded. All right. It was 1980.
Yep.
Yeah.
My wife and I had just been married. We lived in a little house on 10th Street. And so we played in the church softball league. So we were out playing catch, you know, in the middle of the street in 10th Street. And I looked over to the west and I said, oh, my gosh, that's a big ass storm headed our way.
Wow.
I mean, look at that. I mean, it's like enormous. It's huge. And so. This is long before the internet now.
Right.
It's long before bulletins and that sort of thing. And then we heard Mount St. Helens had exploded. And the area was
you
covered.
You saw it before you heard
it. We were covered with ash all everywhere. Yeah. Nobody knew what to do, right?
Amazing.
So your old fat dad, who was the morning guy at the time, who I learned a lot from, your old fat dad called me up at 3 in the morning and said, my doctor won't, I have asthma. My doctor will not let me go out in this stuff. So you are doing the morning show.
Oh my God.
I had never done the morning show before, right? And so that was when Bill Schwanke, Grizzly Bill Schwanke, and Ray Nicolai, the news guy, legendary people in our business.
Right.
Right.
I had my very first opportunity to work together with them on the air. We did not play one single song. From 6 o'clock that morning when we went on the air, we took phone calls, we talked with doctors, we talked with mechanics, we talked with builders, we talked with, you know, professors and all this. And it was the most incredible, electrifying feeling I've ever had on the radio. And I realized at that point, I'm all done with rock and roll, man. Right, I mean, I'm all done with playing music. I want to do talk.
What was it, Peter? Was it the notion that the idea that the community was getting together and you were helping to kind of orchestrate
yes,
that?
Yes, we were facilitating. We were actually helping people live through an extraordinary event. And we were
in real time.
In real time. And we were helping them find ways to get things done. You know, don't do this, do this, don't do this, don't do this. And people were calling up and doctors were calling in. And it was just, we were, Bill and Ray and I were on the air from 6 a.m. almost till 2 or 3 in the afternoon. And we spent the whole day right. talking about what was going on in our community.
Because back in, it's not that long ago, but back in those days, if you wanted to research, what do I do when right. know, ask? You'd have to go to the library.
Yeah, yeah.
I
mean, you got to get an encyclopedia. Yeah, you got to do something.
There's no other way to do it.
And we were calling people. We were calling people at the University of Montana. You know, what should people do? I don't know. Should you wash your car? Should you not wash your car?
Right.
You know, all that stuff.
Yeah, so. Should you wear a mask? Should you,
yeah,
you,
exactly.
Even in your own house?
There weren't masks then, maybe not.
Yeah, exactly.
Wait, so that was a particular moment.
That was a benchmark moment for me. I knew at that point I had to be in talk radio.
So fast forward to 9/11. So yeah. With 9/11, you were saying.
With 9/11, I was already doing the Morning News Express on KGVO, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And it was a formatted show where we had newscasts and sportscasts and all that, and we threw that all that aside, and we opened up the phones and started talking to people. And people were calling, and it was absolutely, the word I think of is, it was cathartic. Mm-hmm. It was, people needed to talk about what was going on in New York City and Washington, D.C.
Absolutely.
Right here in Missoula, Montana. They needed to know.
Sure.
Sure. Know what, I remember watching 9/11. Somebody called me and said, turn on your TV. They didn't
right.
even tell me why.
Where were you, Arnie?
I was in Stevensville.
You were you were in MT.
Yeah. And I turned on the TV, and I remember, as they're talking about mm-hmm. the building getting hit, another plane flies behind
oh my God.
The people talking and hits the building at the, yeah. in real life, real what? Time. The guy turns around and says, oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was happening like I've never seen it before.
Let's do a quick ID, as if we need to ID this voice. Arnie and I are talking to Peter Christian, 50 years in broadcasting.
Yeah. So that's a landmark moment. But I want to back up just a little bit.
All right.
Those who don't listen to KGVO because they don't get up in the morning because they have night jobs or whatever know you
mm-hmm.
from being the voice of the Grizz at the
yes,
Grizz Stadium.
Yes,
everybody
yes.
in my sleep.
Every time somebody says that to me, I have to correct them, and I'll tell you why. Because
uh-oh.
My friend Mick Holeen
oh, right.
was the voice.
Was the quote the voice of the Grizz for a long time,
right.
and before that it was Bill Schwanke.
Right.
I'm very protective of that title because.
Right.
That title is earned by the play-by-play guys.
That's true. Right? You're right.
Because they're out there.
You're the voice of the stadium.
Riley,
I am the public address announcer. That's what I am.
How did that happen, though, Peter? How did that become your gig?
Well, my friend Denny Bedard.
Mm-hmm. Fellow Town Square
yes, this is 1989. Came to me and said, hey, there's an opening for a public address announcer for the Grizz. Would you like to do that? I said, well, I mean, why not?
Yeah.
You know, and so yeah, so I thought let's do it. So I visited with Wayne Hogan, who at the time was the athletic
right,
director, a wonderful
right.
man,
great guy.
And so he said, okay, Peter, let's give it a shot. And so my first year, I was absolutely terrible.
who did it before you?
I'm not sure who it was.
Okay, so it was the
yeah. I didn't remember his name, but all I know is. My first year, they were very, very patient with me because they knew I was going to make a lot of stupid mistakes, and I did.
Right.
And but as the second year, third year came along, there was more structure, there was more formatting to what we do, to where now it's 26 years later, right?
Yes.
This is my 26th year of doing it. I have an enormous notebook
okay.
of things that I have to read. Right? And with 26,000 people listening to every word I say, I have to get it right.
Sure.
Yes.
So I get there maybe 2 hours before kickoff and before anybody else is in the little control room up there.
Right.
I'm up there, I've got my headphones on, and I've got that book open, and I'm reading out loud every single word.
Wow.
Page after page.
26 years
page
of doing that.
Page after page after page so that I know. Because when I run across a name... or a word I can't pronounce, I can find out.
Right.
And so if somebody, Malagabagabi or whatever, they, yeah. I will have that name down
right.
so that, first of all, I don't offend them or their parents who came to see their
right,
kid play.
Sure. Right? Right.
So all those things, all that I went through in radio, right,
yeah.
to prepare for news yeah. and talk and all that, went into my preparation right. for being the public address announcer.
That reminds me of that skit by Key and Peeler where they have the name Sequarius Jackson. You know, these names you've never seen, but you've right. never seen before.
I heard that. It's brilliant.
It's brilliant. You know, the other thing that you have that you run into cause as somebody in the stadium is you do it in this format the whole season, and then playoffs come, and you can't do the same thing during the playoffs. You can't say first down.
Used to be.
You can do it now?
For the longest time... The other teams would complain that my first down Montana cry was
and cheerful of the home team of the team
yeah, supporting the home team like you
well,
should
it was biased in favor of the home team well duh.
So everybody does it.
So what I did was I went instead of going first down I would go. And that's a first down. And then the crowd would go,
yeah, right.
Peter.
So we got him.
Wait a second. So now we're jumping around
yes,
a little
yes,
bit.
Yes,
that's
yes.
26 years ago.
All right.
But married in 1980, a couple of milestone moments in your career. When are the kiddos born?
Okay. My son, Luke, was born in 19...
Two
well,
children.
I was born in... I'm sorry. I was married in 1980.
Right.
And Luke is now 40.
Wow.
So he came on a few years later, and
82,
then and then my daughter 83. was born after that, and
Jenna.
And she is now married to a wonderful man,
yes.
David Linscog, and they're all going to be here for the Thursday night deal,
right?
And they're all going to be here for the game. So
that's exciting.
They have never heard me. The Linscogs have never heard me do PA for the
really
for the games.
Kidding?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. So well,
this
anyway.
Is so. Wait a second. So keep Arnie off
say,
to you.
Yes. I was going to say. So you've covered every Grizz home game for 26 years.
I have never missed a single game.
Do people come to you to ask you, you know, handicap the game? Who's going to win? Who's not? No, they don't.
No,
because you're an observer of human nature, and you're watching these games every week.
Well,
and you know the names of all the players and the coaches.
Let's put it this way: I am just as big a fan as any person sitting out in that.
Sure.
Right. But the cool thing is I am standing literally about 40 feet above the 37-yard line. They have the big number 37 right there.
Yeah.
That's where I stand, and I got a view of both ends of the stadium. And it has been an incredible privilege to do that.
So is there any one game that you stands out above all the others?
Oh, heavens, yes. Every time we beat the snot out of the Cats. but I will say the App State game in the snow.
Yes,
oh,
I remember
sure.
that one.
And the South Dakota State game when they were up by like 30 points.
Right at half.
Yeah.
Right.
And
so I have to tell you a story about that.
Mark Mariani had that 100-yard punt return for a touchdown. That was the stick that lit the dynamite. The match that lit the dynamite, and the Grizz went on to win big.
Yes. Well, I got to tell you something about that. I'll interrupt for a second. Just saw Mark here for the Hall of Fame induction. He was just inducted into the Hall of Fame. A blue pony from Haver.
Right.
Who had
player.
Who had number 100 on the Grizz. He was a walk-on, got number 100, didn't play and all that kind of stuff. He gave me, he was a student of mine when I taught at the university.
Wow.
He gave me the game ball from the South Dakota State game.
Seriously?
I have that game ball.
Really?
Cool, Arnie. Thanks for everything.
Wow.
And when he came back for the Hall of Fame, you know, he has a 4-year-old mm-hmm. son. He has a 2-year-old daughter. His 4-year-old son's
right.
name is
right.
Maverick. Maverick Mariani.
Okay.
And
right.
I said, I was sitting at home. I said, who am I going to give this ball to? Who's it going to mean the most to? So when I came to I went to the Hall of Fame induction. I said, Mark, I've been shepherding this ball since 2000, I think it was what, 13 or 12?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I said, I want to give it back to you, and I want you to give it to your son so you can always tell him a story. Because every time Mark appears anyway, they show that clip
right.
where he gets
Amazing.
The ball and runs down, and he mm-hmm. gets two touchdown catches,
right.
and they win the game.
Right.
And he actually had a tear in his eye. He says, that's the only game ball I don't have.
Wow. Oh, my God. Did he remember that he gave it to you?
Yes, he did. And he hugged me. He had a tear.
Oh,
in
yeah. That's beautiful.
Said,
Arnie,
well,
that's
this is
awesome.
More meaningful to me,
yeah.
giving it back to you than yeah. maybe even you giving it to me. I mean, it was meaningful both ways. But
that's awesome.
But that is the game. That's the game I remember the most. I was sitting in the stands. How are we going to come back from 30 points down at half against now the team is the national, you know, they've won 29 straight or 30 straight mm-hmm. games.
Right.
They're the number one team in and he comes back and they win it.
And this is one of your moments. So question, do you feel like, is your notoriety equal parts KGVO or Grizz PA announcer, or a little bit of both?
Well, to be honest with you,
and a little bit of both.
Well, I don't get paid.
I know. I told you I need to negotiate for you. This is terrible.
To do the games.
You know?
They give me a couple of tickets,
a couple of
season tickets, right? And so I would do it for nothing. I would absolutely do it for nothing. It is a
privilege.
Huge love of my life. It's a labor of love, and all the one you should, if you want to see what chaos is really like, all right,
yeah.
just come up into that booth
right.
while we're doing the game, because I have three guys on my right who are yelling and shouting at each other, because one of them's a timekeeper, one of them helps with the clock, another one works with the refs, right, and they're yelling back and forth, da, 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 da. They're doing their thing. I've got John Wall, who is no relation,
right?
But he's my spotter.
Basketball
he's the best
player.
Spotter in the history of the world. Anyway, makes me sound really good. He's feeding me all the names and of the stuff of the players, and I'm yelling and talking loud and reading and all this, and then we've got our Nick, our manager up there,
right.
Directing all the stuff. Then we've got a music guy, and then we've got three or four guys on the computer in the right. back, right? And they're all it is a cacophony.
Really, it's crazy.
Yeah, and it's nuts. And I wouldn't have it any other way.
But
it's
out
amazing.
Of all of that, you're legendary. I mean, I only know two stadium announcers.
Right.
Bob Shepard for
Bob
the Yankees.
Shepard, right.
You know, he used to
Number.
Say, and they had a, you know, he did his version of what you do. He used to say, and batting first, a second, you know, playing shortstop, you know, number one, Derek Jeter. And they would go, Jeter.
He would do that. He would pronounce the second, the last name twice.
Right. He had his stick.
Mark Bavaro.
Yeah.
Bavaro.
Yeah. So that was his thing.
Yeah.
You know, and you're the other one. I mean, what other thing?
He was a Giants announcer, too.
Yeah.
So wait, Peter. So we're taping this show before the Grizz Cat game.
Yes.
Tell me what you like about what you're seeing with this year's Grizz, and what are some predictions?
Well, let me tell you, I think our defense is unbelievable. I think they are very, very solid. I think our linebacking core is as good as I've ever seen, and these guys play with their hair like their hair is on fire.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And I love Alex Gubner. Right. I love his passion and his joy.
Number 99,
when,
right?
When he's out there, you know, basically crushing people to the ground.
Yes.
You know, I love the passion that these young men portray on the field, and I think our quarterback he is tall, he is strong, and he's very difficult to bring down.
Yeah,
right. So.
That's
there.
A predict. So no predictions.
I don't make predictions.
No, I'll tell you.
You are in the news
game.
That's
I like
true.
To watch the
best
game
one
play
word,
out.
One word response I've heard was Bobby Houck was doing his press conference after the game, and they said to him, "How does it feel playing for the Big Sky Championship?" And he said, "Normal."
Good answer.
I thought that
I like
was
it.
A great answer.
Good
for
answer.
I like it.
Great
yeah.
answer for that.
Let's we've spanned your career. We've talked about your roots in music,
mm-hmm,
your
right.
roots in radio, your roots in announcing as the PA. When you're not doing any of this stuff, what do you enjoy doing? What's the private Peter Wall enjoy doing?
Don't tell anybody.
Okay.
I read.
You well, good.
I love to read. I love C.S. Lewis. I love a lot of those science fiction authors. I'm a sponge. I just read. I love to read.
Do you mix it between nonfiction and fiction?
Yeah,
you have a good mix?
It drives my wife crazy because I don't travel well, right? I don't vacation. I'm probably the most boring person you will ever meet because I don't really have any hobbies.
Yes, you do, though. You run. You exercise. He does.
He's in good shape. He's in great shape for a guy. I've seen a lot of guys in the studio who can't fit through the door. So remember Steve Dahl in Chicago, famous radio broadcaster?
Yes. But Peter, that's true, though. You do run. You do exercise, right?
When I can. Yeah.
And you read.
I read.
How about family and families?
My son lives here in Missoula. My daughter's in Seattle. And we try to get together with Luke at least once or twice a week to have dinner,
nice.
All that kind of stuff. He's a single guy, so ladies.
Yeah, Peter's been doing that since I've known him. He's trying to get his son married.
And you're still involved in the church and church.
Yes, absolutely. Very involved. Yeah, very much involved.
And tell us a little bit, this is going to be post your 50th event.
This is actually in the middle of my 51st year.
Really?
Oh, no. Good.
Oh, yeah. Good. So we're way ahead of the game.
We're behind.
But some, the proceeds from the event at the Hilton Garnett are going to a charity.
Fight Crime, Invest in Kids. And
those are two things that you're passionate about.
Yes, I have an enormous appreciation and respect for anybody that puts on the uniform and the badge and goes out there and doesn't know what they're going to experience on a day-to-day basis. Sometimes it brings a tear to my eye when I think about, you know, what these guys have gone through, men and women have gone through. I think about Trooper Wade Palmer, what he went through. Mm-hmm. And I think about one of the moments I think I might talk about on Thursday was, if you remember the Miracle Baby story from Lolo, mm-hmm, about the guy who had ingested meth, and he took his girlfriend's son up into the woods. And you got to remember, there are hundreds of thousands of acres of forest land up there.
Right.
Right.
And he, I don't know what I did with the baby. He's up there somewhere. So these the Forest Service guys and the Sheriff's Department guys, they did this massive search. And two of them were walking up a forest trail, and they found an abandoned car there. The guy's abandoned car, but they looked around. They didn't see the baby anyway. Baby wasn't in the car seat or anything. And they had turned around, and they were beginning to walk back down, and they heard a muffled cry.
Oh my God!
Yeah. Well.
And they went back, and underneath, the man had buried the child underneath a brush and sticks and weeds and stuff. And they picked him up, and he was in this filthy little onesie, but he was wailing his little heart out.
Right.
And
that's a fantastic story. I mean,
that's an amazing
story.
Yeah.
And then
when I wrote about it, and this is what I'm so passionate about news, okay?
Right.
I love doing the news. And so when I reported on that, I wrote in the story where they had the picture of all these guys getting their awards. Sorry, this is going to get to me.
That's okay.
This little boy had a room full of godfathers.
Wow.
All in uniform.
Wow.
And I found out just this week, this little guy is now like 5 years old.
Yeah.
And is doing very well. He's somewhere here in Western Montana. I have no idea. I don't know what his name is. I don't want to know what his name is. He's just a cool little kid. And it was one of the great stories that I've had the pleasure and privilege to cover for KGBO.
Well, you take it very seriously, your commitment to the community, and that's important to you. So, it always has.
You also touched on something which I think is important for our listeners to know.
Yeah.
You write stories.
I do.
On top of just reading something somebody else wrote or even something you wrote,
you write
news stories.
I write all my own stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you're a writer and a deliverer.
I mean, that takes a talent. Yeah. Where'd you learn that?
You just pick it up. Like I say, I read a lot.
Right.
And my mother was a school teacher in addition to being a DI sergeant in the Marine Corps. But I basically learned by doing. I went to the University of Montana for 1 year in 1971, after I got out of high school.
Right.
I was 17 years old, way too young to go to college.
Right.
But my mom said, look, your dad's paying for your tuition, so go, right?
Yeah.
And so I went. I was totally depressed. I didn't know a soul. This is long before they had people leading you by the hand to help you get your classes and all that.
Here's the campus. Yeah. Good luck to you. Right.
Have fun, son. And so I bombed out. I totally bombed out. But I was going to be a journalism major. Right.
So you became a journalist.
But that went in the wayside, and then I became involved in Buttries and all that. And,
right.
And got into my career.
Over the years, you've interviewed a ton of different people.
Yes.
Who are the...
I haven't told you about Paul Harvey.
Yeah, tell... Well, Paul I was going to say...
Who's Good your date.
My second question was going to be, who's your greatest influence? But talk to us... Well, first of all, start with that. Who's your greatest influence?
My greatest influence, two of them, Ray Nicolai and Bill Schwanke.
Got it. So local guys. Yes. The local news. Right.
Both local guys.
And your favorite guests that you've spoken to over the years? Different...
Oh, you know. My goodness. The Angel Flight guys brought a couple of little youngsters in that they would fly back and forth to Seattle for free.
Oh, sure.
And the spina bifida and things like that. Yeah. Those are the true heroes
of the community.
In my book.
Yeah. Sure.
Those are the people that I just absolutely love getting on the air and letting our listeners have a chance to see them, you know, through whatever, and through the internet, and also by, like you say, the theater of the mind. And, you know, and then we had the first ever transgender prima ballerina in this studio from Great Britain as part of the Ballet Beyond Borders deal, right? And so that was an amazing thing.
That's a one of a kind experience, right?
And what a delightful person.
Yeah.
And so I heard the story about 10 years old, realized I'm the wrong body, right? And had the surgery and then became this prima ballerina, the very first ever transgender ballerina, prima ballerina.
Well, let's do this. Let's take a quick break. Our guest is the inimitable, the legend, Peter Christian, celebrating 50 years in broadcasting.
51 and a half.
51. Oh, yeah, right. 51 and a half. Back after this. Arnie, we are back with our guest, Peter Christian.
So 51 and a half counting.
Yes.
What's the future look like for
the future looks like for me? I have no idea. I love what I'm doing. I realize I can't do it forever, right? God has helped my voice stay.
It's very vibrant and youthful.
The timbre is still what it used to be. So as long as that keeps going, I hope that I will have an employer like Scott who will because remember, Town Square Media is about more than radio. It's about digital. It's about all sorts of other things that enhance what radio is all about.
Sure.
I'm not real good at that stuff. But because of the patience of the people here, they help me get through it and allow me to do what I love to do.
Right, which is the most wildly popular radio show in the state of Montana.
Anyway, yeah.
And for our listeners, what... Tell us about your show. I mean, what time is it? For people who are not familiar with it.
Well, I used to do the Morning News Express, which is now Montana Morning, and Ace Sourwine is doing that now.
Right.
And then we do Talk Back. Talk Back is Montana's only live interactive radio talk show, right? And or at least Missoula, before Aaron Flint came along. And so we quite literally... have people, you know, you quite never know. You never know what you're going to get, you know, when you tune in. If you look at that calendar over there, Nick Christensen is a sensational manager and producer.
Right.
And he books all those guests, arranges them, and feeds me all sorts of good information so that I can ask good questions. And then people call in. And then it becomes their show.
So they can listen to it every day at what time?
We're on from 8 to 10.
8 a.m.
to 10 a.m.
And listen, I'm biased, but this is my favorite show.
It is my favorite show, too.
Talk Back. I listen. We have a lot of shows. We have a lot of babies here.
We even do this show, but that's my favorite show.
But my favorite show is Talk Back because I think the immediacy and the interactivity with the community kind of meeting here at the radio station, there's nothing better. Radio is at its best when that happens and happens well, and you do it great.
And the most important thing you miss is that
right.
Peter is the perfect host. He doesn't interject himself in a way that
what do you mean?
That diverts the conversation into some partisan, experience. I mean, lots of people that host talk show want to talk more than the guests.
But let's put it this way: I try to treat people the way I would want to be treated if I was a guest on the show.
Right.
Right.
And you do a good job of that.
I think there's something in the Bible about that.
Yeah.
Do unto others as you would have them do unto you, right?
You've been a delightful guest. This is fun, turning the tables on you.
Yes. Thank you.
We've enjoyed it very much.
I'm looking forward to the next 50 years.
I've lived through the experience. Thanks,
and
guys.
And rose above it. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, John.
All right, Arnold. I'll see you next week.
See you next week, Scott.
Thank you for listening to What Do You Know?
I can't wait for the next show, Scott.
I'm excited too, Arnie. If you'd like to suggest a guest, send me an email at scottrichman@townsquaremedia.com. We'll see you next week. And thanks for listening to News Talk KGVO.